We are talking today with David Boyer. He is author of the new book, Kings and Queens, Queers at the Prom. David, thank you for spending time with us today.
Pleasure.
If you could start out and tell us, what was the motivation in putting together Kings and Queens?
Well, I mean, as you can imagine, it started with my own prom. And, you know, it wasn't a particularly horrible prom or a particularly spectacular, wild, sexy prom. It was just a normal prom. And I was in the back of a limo with two other couples and my own date, and saw the two of these other two couples getting it on, and had my date sort of weaving her fingers through my hands, and I pretended to be asleep. And it was really clear to me what the future might hold in store, that this was going to be an issue. The fact that I liked guys and didn't want anything to happen with her was something that was different, and that there were expectations. And so, you know, the book came out of that experience. It actually started as an article in Might magazine in 1997, which I don't know if you know anything about Might magazine, but that was sort of a magazine in San Francisco that launched the career of, like, Dave Eggers, for instance, was the editor at the time, who actually agreed to run the piece way back when. But it always felt like a book, because it was, you know, for that article, I interviewed, I think, 9 people about their proms. And, you know, it was sort of fascinating just to hear these different stories, but it was an article for a magazine, so there's only so much room, and it had to be very sort of prom-focused, you know, because it was an article. But I realized that it was a much larger issue, and that it was a wonderful lens to look at gay history, look at teen history. And so when I thought about doing it as a book, I realized I was going to have a lot more freedom, which scared off a lot of publishers, because, you know, they wanted a happy, fun, gay prom book. But, like, that's an oxymoron. I defy anyone to write a gay, happy, fun prom book, because if you're going back in history, which this book does, it goes from 2004, essentially, back to 1935. You know, there weren't too many happy gay people going to proms as gay couples in 1935. It just wasn't happening. And so that's a roundabout way of getting to sort of what my motivation was.
And so how did you go about finding the subjects for your book?
Well, I mean, part of it, what was important to me was that it was about history. And so I wanted a sweep of history starting now and starting and going all the way back to 1935. So I had a lot more friends and friends of friends that were more in the 80s. So everyone else I had to kind of look around a bit. And so in some cases, the older people I found through gay senior organizations, in many cases, the younger people I found through queer youth organizations. And then at some point I realized, you know what, like, I'm getting a lot of the coasts and I'm getting a lot of white people. And that's not what the book is about. I wanted it to be as sort of comprehensive as possible without, you know, without sort of going into sort of token this and that. And so I put up a website, gayprom.com, which is still up, and did press work about a year ago now, and tried to spread the word through the gay press exclusively that there was a new website where people could put their prom stories and that it may end up in a book. And so that's where I found probably a good third of the stories were people who submitted stories online. I was able to look at them and then contact them directly if they were interested, and interview them. And, you know, what's interesting about the book is that it's oral history. It's not essays written by other people, and it's not me writing necessarily about someone else's story. It's me interviewing them and then editing down and then offering some context. But I know it works when somebody, you know, yesterday Chris Bennett was at a reading that I did here in Seattle at Elliott Bay, and he said, you know, it was like an out-of-body experience hearing me read his story. And that's when I know I've done it justice, when it feels almost more clear than, you know, I'm sure, like, if we were to listen to this conversation right now and edit it down and get out a lot of the ums and some of the side thoughts and the tangents, and because it's early, that's the benefit of oral history, is that you can... it's almost an extract, like the essence of an interview.
Can you give us kind of a brief history of proms in general?
Sure. I mean, what's interesting about proms is that they grew out of, as high schools were becoming more compulsory and where kids were forced into high schools because of first the war and the Depression, you know, where people would go off to war and they'd come back and their kids were taking all the jobs, and they needed to get the kids out of the jobs to make room for the GIs. And so if you look at like the 20s, 30s, 40s, the percentage of kids going to school was just jumping at a huge rate. And so suddenly, by the 50s certainly, you had, and that's when proms really took off. I mean, they started in the 20s, but you can see them becoming much more popular throughout this time because you suddenly have all these kids in school, and the schools were becoming like a youth culture hotbed, and the schools didn't know what to do with them. And so they would start extracurricular activities like yearbook, like school sports. And one of the things was prom, because that was a great way of, you know, it, I mean, it really is about modeling heterosexual courtship, period. There's no other way you can look at it, in the sense that you're dressing up in what you're going to be wearing on your wedding day, essentially, for the first time. You're expected to dance these dances like your parents danced at the time. And that was the idea, was that you were going to model heterosexual courtship, romantic, don't touch, you know, all the sorts of ways that they wanted kids to really be interacting. And so that's where it started. And then, you know, it grew from there. And every generation, it takes on the flavor of that generation. Hard to find people in the 70s that went to their prom, or harder, I should say, because it just wasn't done. You were really lame if you went to the prom and if you were gung-ho about it in the 70s. 80s, not a problem. Everyone seemed to have gone and has wonderful photos to prove it. So, I mean, that's a sort of roundabout history, but if we want to know where it started from the word promenade, a French word, meaning to sort of walk back and forth, you know, showing off your finery. And it was then later shortened to prom. And what's wonderful about it is this uniquely American thing. These don't exist elsewhere. If they exist elsewhere now, it's because they are copying or being influenced by the American prom, which has become, you know, as we export our culture through movies and whatnot, you know, it does find its way into other places, but it's one of the few American rites of passage that have been around for, you know, a few generations now, going on 100 years. The book has about 75 years worth, and cuts across race, cuts across gender, cuts across class, and that was really what was attractive to me, was that it wasn't just about sexuality. You could also see how there were other things that come into play. Sometimes it's sexuality, sometimes being the only black kid in an all-white school while segregation is just being contested is more of an issue, or more complicated issue. And so that was part of what I was looking at. One story, the woman was growing up during the Depression, and they didn't have proms because, you know, you couldn't afford a dress, and she was living in the Bronx, and, you know, she said she was part of the intelligentsia, and we didn't think proms were anything that was only for people on Park Avenue. And, you know, and she was convinced that she didn't have a story, that why was I interviewing her, and this 86-year-old woman, like, leave me alone, why are you asking me all these questions about a prom that I didn't even have? Because to me, that was just as much the story. Like, I wasn't looking for literally what your prom night was like. That was just a way to sort of look at a much broader history.
Can we go into some of the individual stories Sure. that stand out in your mind? You kind of divided the book into multiple sections, similar to the years one lives through high school, freshman, sophomore, juniors, and seniors.
Yeah, I mean, we were roughly basing it on yearbook design and yearbook sort of, you know, the way yearbooks are divvied up. And you know, I was a frustrated yearbook editor myself, so this was sort of, in some way, the book is sort of colorful and with all sorts of pictures because that's sort of the yearbook that I always wanted to design that no one in their right mind would have ever produced. And so the book, yeah, is divided by section, freshman, which is before 1990, sophomore, which is basically all of the 80s, the juniors, which are before 1980, I think through, let me see here, juniors are 60s and 70s, yeah. And seniors are before 1960. And I decided to go from present to past, which was sort of a decision that I made somewhat later in the game. Wasn't initially, that wasn't the more logical thing would be to go like a history book from the past to the present. But I kind of felt like it would be a sort of anticlimactic to kind of get to the point where you're reading and the stories become more about prom, but less sort of historically relevant. And I kind of felt that I wanted, it is a serious topic in a weird way, and I think it reads seriously because you're going back in history and you're sort of peeling away layers of sort of gay history to the point where you're seeing what it's like to be gay before the word gay even exists. And so to start with that and to end up now just sort of seemed, it just didn't seem right. It didn't seem right to me. I don't know, you know, I can't sort of explain it even really much more than that. It just didn't feel, it sort of felt like the more interesting way to do it. What was your question, though?
Oh, I was hoping we could go through some of the stories that you've got in your book. What stands out in your mind?
Well, I mean, to me, there is no favorite story because these all, what's miraculous is they work together, that one is dependent on the other. So if I do a reading, I can't do a reading of one story. I have to do at least three because they don't make sense individually. Each story, some are more interesting than others and more funny than others, but they really sort of begin to work when you read them. You don't even need to read them in a linear way, you know, from past to present or whatever, but to read more than one is where you really begin to make comparisons, and you can sort of see history changing, and you can see history not being linear, that some people in the 60s had a better time than the people in the 90s, but it all sort of is dependent on sort of both what you bring to it as either you went to the prom or didn't go to the prom or had your own prom story, and then you sort of mix it in with all these other prom stories. So, I mean, I do have certain ones that are funnier than others. You know, there's one, the hapless romantic, Stefan Schlarb, who, you know, it's particularly funny to me because we grew up around the same time, and he was obsessed with sort of having like a pretty in pink kind of prom. I mean, that was sort of the touchstone. And Porky's, he talks about, was out at the time. And so he had this fantasy of like that he was going to have sex on prom night one way or the other, and that was going to be, he's going to morph into this man, you know. And the stories are really funny because he tries to find like the perfect cool date, and she turns out to be a disaster because when he shows up to pick her up, instead of being dressed really funky, which was how he knew her, you know, in the real world, she was dressed like a prom date, you know, in like white satin, and her hair was all shellacked up. And, you know, it's just sort of funny, just sort of the expectations we bring to it, and how, you know, he's a good storyteller too, and so it's a fun story to read, and it's a fun story to look at. Other stories, you know, I think it's fascinating to hear a story of a guy who was the only black guy in an all-white school in 1958, and to have to import a black woman from another town because he simply couldn't take one of his own classmates. It just wasn't going to happen, and he knew it wasn't going to happen, and his family knew it wasn't going to happen. And so sort of what that was like and who he ends up going with and what that whole experience was like, you know, is kind of fascinating to me. And again, he's a good storyteller, and a lot of the people turned out to be great storytellers, and that was part of what was interesting is some people, I would just have vague ideas of what their story was like. I ran into a friend and I said, do you know any older lesbians? Because I really wanted to make sure, again, that there was some representation. And he said, oh, my mom. And I was like, great. You know, do you think she'd be interested in talking about her prom and being a teen? And he said, yeah, I'm sure. She's really open. So I call her thinking I'm getting a sort of like Heather Has Two Mommies story. But it wasn't. It was his mom came out after him. And so she could talk about what it was like to have her son come out, what it was like to go to her own prom, what it was like to watch her son go to prom, and then what it was like after all of that to come out and, you know, essentially leave her husband and start a new life as a out and proud lesbian. And it was just, it was an out-of-body experience for me because it was like hearing what my own mother might say in terms of watching her own son deal with sexuality and what's unspoken and what some of this woman's regrets on wishing she could have done more. But also knowing at the same time that in like 1975, there wasn't much a mother could do. You know, she did what she could, and her son's great and turned out wonderfully. So each story is different, but again, it's sort of how they all touch one another and how they overlap and how they don't.
Talk a bit, if you would, about some of the stories that would be from your seniors section, because mm-hmm. one would have the impression, based on what history we have heard through our corporate media, that sure. things would have been a lot harsher back then. Is that true?
Yeah, pretty much. they were a lot harsher. I think, you know, people just didn't even have words to talk about what was going on in their minds and their bodies. You know, there wasn't the word gay. I mean, I love one guy talking about the first time he heard the word gay. He was in a bar, which wasn't called a gay bar because the word didn't really exist. And hearing someone say the word gay and asking, you know, lesbians sitting next to him, what does that mean? And they would said, well, that's what we are. And this is a gay bar and we're part of the gay community. And this is, you know, before Stonewall, before all of that. So, you know, I think it's harder to kind of it's harder if no one understands what you're going through, and there's no literature out there, and there's no books out there. I mean, which is, again, you know, one of the motivations for this book is both to hopefully fill a gap in sort of the gay history books that are out there, to tell young kids about gay history, and also knowing that in some places it still is a huge issue. There's one woman in the book who graduated in 2003 and who preferred to be anonymous. She's straight, but her prom date was gay, and it was to protect him because he wasn't out and he's still in high school and knew it was still going to be an issue. And so you kind of see, like, yeah, things were tough then, and in some cases they're still tough now, but by and large, you know, it's funny, it's not funny, it's horribly sad, but anyone who graduated before 1960 or around 1960 and earlier, they all got married. You know, they all felt forced into these situations where they had to marry someone. In some cases, had kids that they love and adore and all of that, but this was a life that they felt they had to make as opposed to one that they wanted to. And, you know, a lot of times end up in divorce. And, you know, one guy talked about how he wishes that he didn't have to put someone into that situation, that person being his wife, but didn't see any other option. And the conventional wisdom was, you get married, you have kids, and, like, yeah, you may have some gay feelings, but it'll go away. That you just have to sort of, you know, persevere in the sort of straight lifestyle, and that eventually it'll take. I don't know if that's makes sense, but yeah. So I think it was tougher. I wouldn't want to have had to go through it. And I really respect people who, you know, there is one guy who graduated in 1943, who came out in the 50s, never got married. That's impressive to me. I don't think I had that strength. You know, I didn't come out until after I got out of college, you know, in the 90s. And this is a guy in 1950 who was like, fuck it. This is who I am. I'm going to live my life. And it might not be easy, but he had this sort of strength and character that I think few people have. And he is able to offer a sense of history by being able to talk about his gay peers who are of the same age and the stuff that they're going through now. You know, huge amounts of alcoholism, huge amounts of depression in older gay people, because, you know, they have lived their lives in a world that said that they had to deny everything that they were feeling about other people and had to hide things. And, you know, I only did it for a few years, and it was tiring. And imagine trying to build an entire life, you know, lie by lie, I guess. So you see, it's not exactly, you know, people think, oh, gay prom, fun book. And it is, there are fun things about it. It's not a completely depressing read, but it's reality. And that's why I did it. You know, I wasn't looking to create a fun, happy gay prom book. That wasn't my motivation. I think that would be kind of boring. It might look good on a coffee table, and by the way, this book does look good on a coffee table. I mean, that's part of it also that we haven't talked about, but the design of it, you know, I really wanted to sort of dip into some of that nostalgia and all the colorful sort of yearbook things that people do, you know, through the years, and that was a fun part of it that hopefully, you know, makes it accessible and, you know, is enticing and is fun and pretty to look at.
Was there focus on high school and the prom, because high school years, from my perspective, have to be the most high pressure from both a peer point and a social pressure point.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I'm fascinated with high school because of that. I mean, it's when everything is emerging, you know, your sexuality, your sense of who you are, the sense of what you want to do with your life. And it is a pressure cooker, and especially, you know, it's when you're supposed to begin to be sexual, when it's okay to be sexual. And so I knew that people were going to have interesting stories, and that prom was a way of focusing those stories. It was like a high school memory that wasn't necessarily the only high school memory I wanted to hear about, but I knew that it was something that most people could remember, and that it was training a spotlight on sexuality and on courtship and on coupling up. So yeah, I mean, you know, it could have been about weddings, but I think it would be a lot less interesting in terms of, you know, in terms of, it was compulsory to go to the prom. And if you didn't go to the prom, there was something wrong with you. You were either a big loser or you were gay. And those were the two things, you know, that most kids over time have wanted to avoid. Now, it's a lot cooler to be gay. In fact, in some places, it's really cool to be gay, which is wonderful, you know, that, like, people want to hang out with gay kids. And, like, you know what, frankly, I'm sure the gay kids in high school are tons of fun. So why wouldn't you, you know? But not back when I was in high school. There was no gay community. I mean, there was no gay straight alliance or anything like that. That now there is. I mean, a gay straight alliance, what a wonderful idea.
Since this is a history book, do you see things as progressively, logarithmically advancing in terms of our society, in terms of acceptance of gays?
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, things really have sped up in the last 5 years in an amazing way. Last 10 years, I actually, to be more honest and fair about it. Yeah. I think, you know, but at the same time, there are still pockets of hate and pockets of, you know, misunderstanding. But overall, yeah. Oh, completely. I mean, there are gay proms, you know. I remember being a teen and growing up in the suburbs of New York, and sort of the first gay person that I saw that I even remotely resonated with was on television. He was like a lawyer for the ACLU. I didn't even know there were gay people who could be lawyers and work for the ACLU. I had no, that wasn't out there, you know. And this is like in the suburbs of New York City. So things have changed. I mean, you turn on the television and while I don't necessarily think Queer Eye is the pinnacle of sort of what we want to sort of put out as gay role models, I think it's still amazing that America's tuning into it, and I think it's amazing that, you know, Will and Grace exists. Again, are these the optimal sort of role models? No, but it's pretty amazing. It says something to a gay kid that people are tuning into it, and that it's okay, and that it's cool, and that it's high-rated, you know? It's saying that these are, if you are gay, you could become a decorator, or you could become a stylist, or you could become a lawyer. Or, you know, you can become whatever you want. But that wasn't, to me, it was like I had no clue. You know, I was horrified about what might happen when I came out and what kind of community I was emerging into, mainly because a lot of the imagery out there, certainly fueled by the right, was horrific. I mean, now if I were in those scenes, they're actually sort of fun, you know, like sort of like drag queens and all of that. But if that's your only vision of what it's like to be gay, and the commentary that went along with it at the time wasn't particularly helpful.
And as we record this, the Senate this week is wrestling with same-sex marriages.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an indicator of, I think, in some ways, how far this country has come.
And that the president of the United States feels like he can gain political advantage by coming out against it also tells you where we're at. I think that there's some interesting parallels between prom and marriage, and hopefully this book gets a little bit into that, you know? I mean, if you're forcing people to get married in order to be sort of accepted in society, you know, if you look back before the 60s, you know, and all these stories, you're creating, like, car wrecks all over the place, and it doesn't just impact the gay person, it impacts the person they married, impacts their kids. And if you're saying this is the only way that marriage is only between a man and a woman, you know, you're creating unnecessary harm, and it's not just to the gay people. It's to their family, their friends, their kids, all of it. So, I mean, to me, it's like, if you want to create a better society, like, obviously, I'm not the first person to say this, but you encourage institutions that are about, you know, unifying and bringing people together, not legislating or bringing the courts in to say that you can't allow. It just seems sort of, it seems counterintuitive to what they're trying to do. If it is about sort of strengthening family, well, one way to strengthen family is to not encourage gay people to marry straight people, just to sort of cover their tracks. And that's my own opinion.
What other issues that we haven't covered do you feel are important?
What I love about the book, and not only do I have to say that I want to say that, you know, I love how this book came out. I worked with an independent publisher, Soft Skull Press, as opposed to a big conglomerate or something, and you know, they allowed me to put together a book that really matched my vision. That they said, when I brought them the proposal, they said, we're either going to go up or down on this. We're not going to tell you, you have to change this, you have to turn it into all black and white, you have to change the size of it. And it's, you know, sort of a funky size, and it's four color all the way through, and it's oral history, which is a little bit out of sort of the mainstream right now in terms of what's selling. Like, memoir is selling, but not necessarily, you know, 20 memoirs in one. So that to me has been an amazing experience, and I think part of why I like the book and why it feels sort of special to me is that it has the feel of something that hasn't been sort of massaged to an inch of its life and to sort of fit a certain marketing initiative or, you know, what was going to sell. And who knows how it will sell, but I know at the end of the day that I love how it turned out, and I love looking through it, and I am, you know, proud of it and feel really fortunate to have had a chance to write this and meet these people and tell these stories and hopefully blow a few minds in the process. And again, the design, you know, I definitely want to sort of give some props to the people, you know, who worked on the design. Martin Vineski, who, you know, is a designer who teaches at RISD and was a designer at Speak Magazine. And Jeff Rizzocco, who worked quite extensively on the design with me as we were moving from sort of concept to like, oh my God, we have to get this done and try and get it out for prom season. You know, it's been a real trip. So I think it's always interesting to hear a little bit about sort of behind the scenes of how these things get put together. You know, that it doesn't just sort of show up as like a final book, that, you know, a lot goes into it, a lot of different people helped out, a lot of sleepless nights. And now it's sort of the fun part. I get to just kind of tour around with it and go to different cities, and it's been great.
And how has the feedback been from the book tour?
Well, book tours, I'm learning as I go through the country, are sort of interesting thing that, you know, if you know people in a certain city, then you tend to get a bigger crowd. You know, I'm not Bill Clinton, I'm not David Sedaris. And I think people go to see people that they know or think they know or want to know, like Bill Clinton or David Sedaris. And so, you know, in some cities, like in Seattle, a friend showed up from college I hadn't seen in 10 years because she saw something in the paper, you know, and while there wasn't a huge crowd of people, that was kind of amazing to me. And so that, to me, is a good day where I get to kind of see someone I haven't seen in a while and talk about a project that sort of consumed me for a while. And the response at the bookstores have been great. You know, and that's part of it, is sort of, you know, when you're an independent, coming out of a smaller independent press, you kind of have to get the word out there in different ways and just bringing it to the attention of the bookstores. You know, so if you hear this and you're interested in the book, go to your local independent bookstore, see if they have it. If they don't have it, ask them to order a copy just to see it. You might not buy it. You don't have to buy it, but check it out. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is they send it back to the publisher, you know, if it doesn't sell, which is part of the publishing business, I guess, or as I'm learning.
With that, we're out of time. I want to thank you for spending time with us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We've just been talking with David Boyer. He is author of the new book, Kings and Queens, Queers at the Prom.